This is Pat Loika, and you're listening to Loika Mania. How's it going, everyone? This is Pat Loika here. You're listening to Loika Mania episode 44. This week, I am joined by my good buddy, making his return appearance after a few weeks. I think it's been over a month now since we last had you on. Antonio Cuneo, welcome back.
Hey, sir. How are you?
Pretty good. And today, we are here because we are going to talk to Mr. Brian Michael Bendis. That's right. One of the architects of the Marvel Universe, and probably one of the guys who has really influenced the direction that the Marvel Universe has been going over the last decade, at the very least. And another thing, though, about Brian is that, he is very influential in not just comics, but to be quite honest, in our lives, because both Antonio and I were both members of his forum, and we met there, we became friends through there, and we met, aside from each other, we met other friends. And
really
it kind of grew, yeah, and lots of really cool people, and none of that would have been possible if not for, for his board. And
yeah,
when to be quite honest, I honestly feel that we kind of owe the guy a lot because of everything. His creation, his community, the community that he created, had given to us. So this is, this has been something that we've been looking forward to, and. Brian kind of knows us already, but this is the first time we'll get a chance to actually spend a bit of time talking to him about his work, his writing, and what his plans are. Of course, with this week being a very special week for Brian, with the Powers casting announcements and Ultimate Spider-Man 160, which we will probably end up spoiling. So I'm just warning you, if you don't want any spoilers for Ultimate Spider-Man, wait a bit until you read it, because it's
kind of spoiled in
it's kind of spoiled by the media, but
not even the media, the name of the arc, but
it's a really special story.
It's not the ending, it's how you get there.
Exactly. So we do spoil some stuff, so just be careful. Antonio, of course, where can people find you online?
Oh, I am on Twitter, as always, Thwipstar, just at Thwipstar. And I've actually, since last we spoke, that month ago, I have updated my blog with a couple of posts. So if you want to read what I have to say, it's theshelfbyantonio.blogspot.com.
All right, we will be sure to include a link to that also in our show notes. And, of course, I can be found in the usual spots at patloika.com or comicbooknoise.com/loikamania. And you will also find me on Twitter at twitter.com/patloika. Before we go any further, I want to say special thanks to Mr. Seth Kushner. He is a photographer based out of New York, and he graciously allowed me to use an image that he had a photo that he had taken of Brian Michael Bendis as the cover art for this podcast. So thanks to Seth, and you can find him at sethkushner.com. Again, we will link to his site also, so you can check out his portfolio and his amazing work. And that should be it for now. And also, I want to send a quick shout out to Chris Mays, and he has been on this show before, but he is now he has produced the new logo for Loika Mania, and he is going to be designing our covers because he is such a badass. You can find him at chrismays.com for more. And we'll have all these links over at the show notes. This is it's the beginning of kind of a new era for Loika Mania. Lots of cool stuff coming, and we have, next week we will be chatting with Rick Remender, so keep an eye out for that. Anyways, again, thank you for listening. Thank you for downloading this podcast, and hope you enjoy our chat with Mr. Bendis.
And thank you for having me, buddy.
Hey, no problem, man. It was good. It's good times. Everyone, take it easy. How's it going, everyone? This is Pat Loika, and we're back with Loika Mania. And I am, of course, joined by Antonio and our very special guest, Mr. Brian Michael Bendis.
Yay, me!
Yeah, indeed. This is pretty big week for you, Brian, with lots of stuff coming up with Powers and, of course, the big Ultimate Spider-Man issue that came out this week. So I imagine it's going to be pretty busy, pretty chaotic there at home right now with all this. I can imagine people trying to get a hold of you right now wanting to talk about Spider-Man.
you're very lucky. Baby Tabitha is asleep. The kids are at school. Today is the calm after the storm. So yesterday was pretty maddening, but today is much calmer. So that's good. Get back to work.
Well, congratulations again to Baby Tabitha, actually, your newest addition to your family.
Thank you.
I think I think it's wonderful what you and you and Alyssa do with kids. I think all the evidence I've seen points that you're an awesome dad. And when I saw you at the Emerald City Con, and you and Olivia were signing Takio, I can tell you guys are really having so much fun there at home.
Yeah, no, any father would tell you, like, 8 is a great age. It's just, you can actually have a real conversation with your kid for the first time and, share things that you like with them. She literally just was sitting down here yesterday watching music videos on YouTube that I could pull up, and it's like I'm some sort of magician with me. Like a doll, like, appear. And I came very close. I stopped myself, but I almost said, when I was a kid, you had to sit in front of MTV and wait all day to see your favorite video. But I held back from my old man. you realize you sound like an old man in 2 seconds. It's like crazy.
Yeah, and
but thank you for that. That was very nice of you to say. Obviously, it's my entire life is wrapped around these kids, and I love them dearly. So that was nice of you to say.
Oh, yeah. Well, it's true. Like I said, when I saw you a couple months back, you guys seem to be really, really happy. And, that's always good to see.
Thanks.
And, it's really cool to see that sort of thing going on.
Well, it's hilarious. It was her first convention as a quote-unquote professional. And
yes.
She was with her cousins. And for at least 20 minutes, she was completely into it. And then her and her cousins went away. But I did give her allowance, and she did spend it on a Captain America shield,
nice.
Which maybe one of my favorite moments of my whole life. It's very funny. Cut to a couple of weeks ago, the Marvel editorial came up here for a retreat at my house, and when Tom Brevoort saw Olivia had a Captain America shield in her room, you could tell his appreciation of me as a human being was much higher. Hold on 1 second.
Sure.
All right. It's okay. I just blew off a phone call for you. See, Pat, that's how much I love you guys.
Oh, thank you. before actually we continue any further about all the stuff that's been happening, I just wanted to take the time to say, to be honest, I just want to say thank you, because this podcast, a lot of the stuff going on in my life and the friends I've made would not have happened if not for you and the board that you created for all of us. So I just wanted to kind of take this moment to say thank you.
You know what, Pat, and I told you this privately, and I joked around about it on Word Balloon, but I honestly, the reason I'm doing the podcast today, and you are a tremendous comic book reader and fan to all of us. You kind of embody like everything that's right with readership, and I really just when I come to a convention and there you are, I you and Jew Mafia, I love just saying that out loud. Imagine there, it really brightens my day. I mean, like and we privately, like Ed and Matt and I have actually said this, like it's you kind of look out in the room and you see you guys there, and it just gives it all a nice focus and focal point, and it's really great, man. So thank you is what I'm saying. You have no idea what it means to us. Absolutely no idea.
Oh, thank you.
I just want to say that, I totally agree with Pat. If it wasn't for the board and everything, we would have never met and we would have never been friends. So, and me and Pat have a good friendship because of your message board and, your comic books.
Thank you. I'm insanely proud of that fact. When you guys go out for drink-ups, even when it's, conventions, I'm not there, and you guys just find, you know, I told my wife, I go, do you realize that if I passed away, the board wouldn't notice for about a month? But it really, I'm immensely proud of it. You know, every time any comic book professionals are gathered anywhere in the world, the conversation of the board comes up and their response or reaction to it. And I'm very proud of how it's perceived versus how other boards are perceived. So thank you guys.
Yeah. Well, thank you again. You know, it's really appreciated.
Yeah. Now that we got rid of the riffraff.
Oh man.
Do you want to tell people now that for years you were both Pat and Fake Pat?
No, I don't know who that person is. I did find it funny that you kind of put things in perspective when someone signs onto a message board and they deliberately get attention by, you know, signing up under, you know, kind of impersonating someone, you know. And I saw that when he used to go by Pat, sadly not Loika, on the board, and I was like, why is he doing that? Who is this person?
I honestly think it was a compliment to start. I know you didn't see it that way, and I believe me, I've been the receiving end of stuff that was supposed to be a compliment, but I, for the life of it, couldn't see it. But I think you were like king of the board, and he was sad that he wasn't. I think that's all it was. Start. So that's why I let it go, and then all of a sudden it was, you know, and then I turned around for 2 seconds and all hell breaks loose. That was before I was a parent. Now I don't put up with shit like this at all.
And speaking of, we'll kind of move past that for a bit, and we'll
get... Let's talk about Fake Pat for another hour.
I don't know. I wasn't quite sure what to feel when he got banned, but you know what? He probably deserved it.
It was like a little piece of you got banned. See, that's how it goes.
I don't know about the piece of me, but, you know, whatever. Speaking of, you know, all hell breaking loose, Ultimate Spider-Man 160 came out yesterday, and I can't believe I ended up tearing up reading that book.
Yeah, that...
It was really good.
Oh, thanks, man.
That was heartbreaking.
A very unique experience to go on Twitter and literally have hundreds of grown men confess to crying, but at the same time, it's kind of what I wanted. You know, it's weird, like, while I was typing it, I was a mess. I do believe you can't fake that stuff, but if it's happening, if you're emotional, if you're angry, or whatever emotion you have while you're typing, if you really have it, it's a much better chance of getting through to the reader. You know, there's so much you can't control, but then I, you know, but it's so embarrassing to hand in a script that you were blubbering over, you know. So I handed in, and Mark Panisch, our editor, had the same reaction, and then Bagley had the reaction, and so your fingers are crossed that through every filter that the script goes through to get to the reader, through the lettering and the coloring and the placement of the X-Men Chisholm ads and all that stuff, that you that it still has an emotional connection. And so I was relieved, you know. I got the book a little early, so some of my friends had read it and they responded, so I was feeling pretty good about yesterday, but the overwhelming feeling was amazing. And also us and Marvel hitting the slow news day jackpot on Tuesday with getting all those headlines was a big surprise too. So it was really an amazing day. It really just was everything that's right to me about comics and in the internet community, and everyone just enjoying themselves, and pretty good.
I was just gonna say that Mark Bagley just was amazing on that book. That art was fantastic, and I couldn't see anyone else drawing it. As much as I liked LaFuente and Stewart and Sarah, just Bagley was the man to do this, and I'm glad he got to do it.
Yeah, it was really, you know, many, many times you hope that you can make something like that happen, you know, but things don't work out because people are busy or under contract or whatever. But it was just this weird, you know, symmetry where we were getting ready to do the story, and Bagley was just coming out of his DC contract, and you know, I was scared that he'd say no. I mean, I really, as soon as that idea was put in my head, that's all I wanted, right?
Yeah.
And obviously, I love Stuart. I love Sarah and Stuart and David immensely, and working with all of them. But this particular story, I said, oh, my God, it's got to be Bagley. But he left Marvel because I was giving him too much Spider-Man crap to draw. So as he comes back, you know, hey, surprise, Spider-Man is, you know, but I told him, I go, listen, it's a welcome back card. It's the best welcome back card we have. And I presented him the whole story, and you know, he was coming back to do Brilliant. But this was a better welcome home card, you know, and he saw it that way and delivered literally like it was crazy. You know, sometimes people get back together after being, you know, bands get back together or whatever. And
sure,
it doesn't work out so well, you know, but sometimes they do. So I was thrilled from the first pages on. I was like, oh, this is awesome. So
you guys back together did not miss a step.
It was
a great welcome home.
Yeah, thanks. Justin Ponsner, our colorist for the book for many years, has been this grounding element that for most readers would be invisible, just because you're not supposed to pay attention to it. But he's brought so much to the pages for every artist. You know, he colors different from David and from Sarah that he does for Stuart and from Mark, and he's just been delivering for years and years, and I wrote him this long email last night just really thanking him because I could write it as great as I could, and Mark could pencil it as great as he could. If bad coloring choices were made, if they weren't thoughtful coloring choices, the book would have fallen flat. Like if you colored it all yellow or, you know, it just wouldn't have worked. And he's an amazing colorist, and I just sometimes he gets left out of the conversation. And that is Jennifer Grunwald about to yell at me, but I'm not picking it up. So there you go.
Yep. All right.
Go ahead, Antonio.
All right. Sorry. So I was just wondering where the story came from. Was it something that Marvel approached you with, or was it something that as you were writing Peter Parker's Ultimate story that you decided it was something that you wanted to see happen?
Joe and I and Axel and a couple other people over the course of the years, you know, the Ultimate Universe started as one thing, and then it evolved organically to this other thing. And then you kind of look back on it, and, you know, it's commercially doing all, you know, it's still successful, and so it still gets to be published. But its initial mandate had changed, right? So you go, okay, well, let's think about what do we like? What's working? What are we proud of, right? And everything, we really made a list of everything that we liked in all the books, and everything we liked wasn't the, you know, ultimate interpretation of some classic story or classic battle. It was the stuff that was new, that was surprising, and like, you know, Kitty Pride being in the Spider-Man, or the relationship between Peter and MJ being, you know, so different from the get-go, and all that stuff was the stuff that we prided on. And when you ask people what they like about the book, that's what they'll mention, right? So we talked about, like, maybe the Ultimate Universe should only be stories that you couldn't tell anywhere else, not just in the regular Amazing Spider-Man, but in the movies and the television shows. Like, let's tell stories that cannot be done. The story that we told yesterday will not and cannot be told in Amazing Spider-Man or any of the movies or whatnot, you know? Mm-hmm. So that's very exciting. And that's why I think why people responded so much, because they know it's, you know, it's real, and this is the only time they're ever going to see it. And not only that, the story we just told, but what we get to do next. And, you know, we talked about a different Spider-Man, a new Spider-Man for this generation for a couple of years. And we're sitting there talking to ourselves about, you know, what would a new Spider-Man be? What could it possibly be like? And what would it truly make it a Spider-Man story? And we talked about it for a while, and it just was never time. And we even talked about it, like, during Ultimatum, but it wasn't time yet. And there was no hurry. And it was certainly an idea that, if not done right, is a disaster. So we kind of have to wait till the timing is right, or felt right. And this was it. And the big connect for me was, if Peter Parker dies, but his death becomes the Uncle Ben moment for this new character, then it's still a Spider-Man story. It's still the legacy of Peter Parker. It's still about the book that we're working on. Yet at the same time, completely new and different, and something you hadn't seen before. And we all got very excited, and that was it. We were ready to go. So yeah. So it's just an ongoing.
That sounds really cool. Because you don't, when you think of Spider-Man, you don't think legacy character. I mean, I don't think a lot of the Marvel characters have legacy character. Like they have a legacy, but they don't have like a Green Lantern legacy or like a Flash legacy, where a lot of different characters don the suit or the superpowers or whatever. So like, I'm really excited to see what you do. Like, I have a million questions about the new book, but I'm just going to wait until I can read it.
Yeah, if you think about the whole book is Uncle Ben's legacy, then it just, you follow that logic and you can get to where we go. Yeah, and also, not all characters would be able to do that, and you just have to just change your feeling, thinking about it, just like, a little to the left, and you go, that's it. It's right there. And that made the character we're working on now much more real, and all of it much, 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 very much worth doing, you know? So, and once we discovered Sarah, who I think is unbelievable, then you're like, okay.
Totally.
Now we have an artist who is as new and fresh as anyone, who can bring, you know, who now has established herself, and now we can, you know, anchor a book around her, and really, we got something.
Did she design the new costume?
It was her and Joe together, hilariously. There's literally like, you want it to be Spider-Man, but something new, something different, but not, you know. So they literally were just drawing on each other's drawings, and then I think Joe came up with reverse webbing, which looks amazing, but every artist I've talked to said, "Oh my God, are you kidding me? Who the hell wants to draw reverse webbing? That is the only thing worse than webbing is reverse webbing." And I did email Joe and I said, "That's kind of a dick move. you drop once and then go off to your next thing. Sarah has to draw like 300 times an issue, so she'll figure it out. It looks fantastic, but
it's
is a big
great costume move. Though. I think it's fantastic looking."
Yeah, really, really happy with it.
Yeah,
and I've had such a year of watching designers design. First of all, if you look at her work in Ultimate Spider-Man, she's an amazing designer and interior designer and costume designer. And I've really admired how much effort she puts into the costume design of the characters. And now we're working on the Powers pilot, and all the last 2 weeks have been nothing but, you know, costume design, and my whole life now is costume designing. Like, I know what I'm talking about.
That I really like Sarah's work. I mean, even in the earlier parts of the Spider-Man run. Now, I was curious though, because you mentioned Ultimatum, because you guys went through Ultimatum, and you went to you did a relaunch, and then you kind of went back with the numbering. I kind of thought that it was odd that you guys are ending the book after you went through all this.
Yeah, I didn't. Well, it's funny. The relaunch I had no problem with. It was definitely I don't mind a new number one if it's a legitimate new chapter in the book. Mm-hmm. And it absolutely was a new chapter in the book, right?
Yeah,
it
was.
And for me, it's never about sales. I mean, you get your little bump, but it's really about, like Purple Powers. It sells the same no matter what, but we get to the end of a chapter. End of the chapter. So you certainly want to just announce, okay, new chapter. Fine. That when the season ends on the TV show, they let you know. But I do understand that idea is abused quite often in our business, but I get it. But, so we got the new number one, perfect, new artist, new whole thing, and then, a year later, it's Ultimate Spider-Man 150. That's kind of a landmark. Let's celebrate 150. And then you realize that it was actually selling better as 150. So they go back. And I didn't even know they went back to the original numbering until I saw it in the solicitation. Like, no one, I never got hip to that. So my scripts actually have the different numbering up until I saw it. I went, okay, we're back to the regular numbering, which I like because, you know, I worked really hard on getting to 160. That's kind of a big deal. I kind of wanted the 160 on my cover, you know, so I was happy about it. I want annuals and Ultimate Six and other things to count and Ultimate Team Up to count. I want to call it 193 or something. You know?
That's a lot.
Yeah. And you probably have written more Spider-Man issues than pretty much any other writer. I think I'm thinking about it now. You certainly surpassed, you know, Stan Lee's run, and I don't see anyone else writing a single book for that long.
Well, no, I think Claremont.
I think his record is something else to beat. But as far as Spider-Man's concerned,
I don't know where I am on Spider-Man. I don't know how many Jerry Conway did. I can't remember. But I know I've beat the Avengers record, mm-hmm. To the annoyance of everyone. But that was one of those things that Tom Brevoort announced that I'd beaten the Avengers record. Like he just did the math and just put it on Twitter, and the avalanche of spite that slammed me in the face. I didn't even know where it's coming from. I'm like, who? Why are you guys? What did I do? There's not even a book out this week. Why am I getting yelled at? I'm like, oh, okay, all right, because I won't go away. Okay, I can. All right, no problem.
I honestly don't understand the mentality about that. I don't get why they're hating on something like, well, so what? You held on to a gig for how long? That I don't know why people get mad over that.
I was talking to someone at FX about this. You know, where our announcements of the cast went over, you know, pretty great. And there's always like one or two people that you're very upset. You know, they're very, very upset. And I explain. I go, no, you understand. You know, they've been with these characters for a long time, and with that comes a relationship. You know, some of them healthy, some of them not healthy, and then you can tell from the way they word their distress where they're at. Like if they refer to the character as my Spider-Man or my Dina, You go, okay, that's if they think it's theirs, and you're ruining it. Meanwhile. No, it's mine. It's mine. You know, Spider-Man's Marvel. You know, but I get it, and I love that. But there's that extra level where some people weren't, you know, get mad they weren't included in the decision making process of their favorite thing. But at the same time, what would the excitement be if that happened? So I don't get sore. Nothing. And, you know, it's never anything really personal.
I think people don't realize that you've had powers in development for a long time. I mean, Frank Oz was attached to direct a movie a while back, but like, and you've been pretty vocal about everything happening at FX, which, you know, gets me excited because FX is one of my favorite networks right now regarding television. And you wouldn't hire these people if they weren't right for the part.
Yeah, no, I mean, like,
you know, need to realize that.
Yeah, no one's seen Lucy Punch's audition. First of all, 95% of people were thrilled and they got it and they were like, cool. And they knew she was such a out there choice that she must have killed her audition, right? Which she did. She transformed herself into Dina literally on camera. She went from this, you know, spunky British actress to hard-nosed Detroit cop, you know, Nadina right in front of us, and it was quite something, and brought something unexpected and different, which is what Dina is. So of all the actresses, and there were quite a few amazing actresses that came in and really nailed it, but you know, she just brought that extra something, you know. But people like got in their heads that Katie Sackhoff was going to be the part, but Katie Sackhoff's on some other show. Like that,
she's on CSI.
She wasn't even available to audition. I mean, it wasn't even a thing. So and it's nice that, you know, it was cool and she had said some nice things on Twitter, but, you know, it was never even something that could happen. But then, you know, our feeling was too, is it like the reason people like Katie Sackhoff or, you know, anywhere down the list of actresses that or actors that have grabbed a role is because they they, you know, you discover them from something else. Like, but, and hopefully Lucy will be that for people as well. Like, you didn't know who Katie Sackhoff was before Battlestar Galactica. And here comes Lucy, and she's gonna do the same thing, I think. So.
Yeah, I'm really looking forward to that. And also, Lucy has a cool name.
No, like many people had commented that Lucy Punch was a better name for the character than Dana Pilgrim. And I think I wrote on Facebook or something that it's such a good name. I'm surprised it hasn't been the name of an Image comic.
Yeah, I saw that.
Yeah, Lucy Punch PI. That's just I'm amazed that Joe Casey hasn't written that comic.
She comes from a comedic background because she did that sitcom on NBC that only lasted a season a couple of years ago, and she was in Hot Fuzz. So yeah. Like when I heard that she was going to play Dina, I was like, all right, now I can't wait to see this because I know her from is comedic roles.
Yeah, all I knew her from was the Hot Fuzz, and because of my daughter's ages, was she was the evil stepsister in Ella Enchanted. I've seen her in that 100 times, and I saw the Woody Allen movie, which I quite liked, that she was just in, and she's really over the top. I mean, she's, you know, chewing the scenery next to Anthony Hopkins, of all things. So, but yeah, I mean, you guys have not seen what she brought to us, so.
I can't wait. I can't wait to see this.
I also thought the casting for Jason Patrick, I think, was pretty good. He kind of looks at the role. You can see he's kind of grizzled. He's kind of, he looks like a guy who's seen everything, and that works very well for Walker. So I think he'll do really good.
Yeah, I mean, he's a real actor, man. I mean, he really, you know, he only does stories that he completely believes in. And him and I last Thursday, we all got together at Chick Egley's house, the showrunner from the show, and we had it out for like 3.5 hours about just about everything about Walker and everything an actor would need to know about his backstory and you know, the way the world feels and tastes and smells to him versus where he was as a character versus where he is now. And I mean, yeah, it was the most intelligent Powers conversation I've ever had. So, it was great. So, and then the next day he finally committed. So it was a really excellent conversation.
Well, I really hope, you know, the pilot does well and that, you know, it gets picked up for a full, you know, for a full run of TV, because I think there's a lot of stories you could tell there. I mean, you don't even have to adapt anything from the books. You could just do completely new stuff because there's a lot of, you know, unexplored territory as far as TV goes with, you know, this kind of genre.
Yeah, I made it very clear, you know, both publicly and privately, that what I'm looking forward to is the show becoming its own organism, separate from the books. I the books will be there for them to pick at whenever they need to. But you know, my wife is a huge Dexter fan, and Dexter, the shows and the books are completely, you know, different universes, but equally of quality. And Chick Egley was the runner on Dexter during its defining seasons. So. I'm looking forward to this as well. I'm looking for the actors to make the characters their own. All that stuff. We've all been witness to a slavish adaptation here and there, and it's always a noble experiment at best. The stuff that really thrives. I mean, I use Iron Man as the example. There's no comic book you can point to it. Iron Man, the movie, but meanwhile, it's perfectly Iron Man, you know, and that's what I'm looking forward to for Powers, you know. So, it's been an insane couple of months, just absolutely insane every day. You know, I hold back twittering every 5 minutes. What the fuck? You just can't believe. And Mike, you know, my Oming is the only person I really call up and go nuts about with, because we can't believe. There are Powers production offices. There are dozens, if not hundreds, of adult human beings making their living producing this pilot right now. That is madness. It used to be just me and Mike. It's just me and Mike. So this is utter madness. And it's very exciting. You know, the long process that FX takes, but once they're in, they're in. And they... greenlight the pilot, but it's they're thinking long term and what the show really will be, and you guys have seen like on the internet, that even like Outlaw Country, they'll reshoot before they pass. You know what I mean? They'll keep, you know, the same Sons of Anarchy, they redid the pilot before they go. They get very invested. So we're looking forward to seeing what happens once the pilot's put together. But being with our pedigree of Chick Egley and Michael Ginder being so part of the FX family and knowing how to deliver what this network wants, I'm feeling very good, which means we'll probably will never see the light of day. But
don't say that.
No. I honestly, I think I'm unusually
optimistic.
Optimistic, yeah,
yeah.
It's good. I
cautiously optimistic. But
you have, you guys have like, Charles was on The Shield with F, you know. So I recently watched The Shield, and that show blew my mind.
Yeah, and he wrote some of the better episodes, the ones you remember. Yeah, he's a great guy, unbelievably cool, smart dude, who is almost half baffled that he's found himself completely immersed in mine and Robert Kirkman's nerd world.
Yes,
yeah, he knew nothing about. So it's
I can't wait to see this show come to life. Like honestly,
either yeah. I mean, we're filming in what's today? Like 2 weeks.
Mm-hmm. Wow, two weeks. Have you decided on, like, the style? Like, is it going to be, like, a S.H.I.E.L.D. style, like, that kind of cop show? Or is it going to be more cinematic?
Michael Ginder, our director, who has been attached to this project for 3 years, we've been living out of each other's brains for 3 years, has had a vision for the show from day one. He references it often as realistic noir, which is a noir look, but not, you know, not stylized like a Sin City or something like that. I'm not going to talk too much more about it because I want to get like overselling something that doesn't exist yet. But the look of the show has been discussed and labored upon for literally years. So, and he's there right now in Chicago, building sets and making costumes, and every 10 minutes we get an email. Even as we talked, I just got an email about one of the cast members that's coming through. So it's it's pretty great, man.
That's awesome.
And I'm going to go up to Chicago in a couple of weeks and be there for all the beginning stuff and see how long I'm needed, and then we'll see what happens. But yeah, I'm going to be standing on a set of Powers. And yeah,
I still remember reading Fortune and Glory, and remember how pretty much nothing ever happened. Like everything you're trying to do, nothing happened, and finally you have this.
It's insane. And then like even yesterday, I tweeted this too. But I I'm sitting there typing, all of a sudden my phone rings, and it says Powers Production Office. I'm like, what?
That's what comes up with the caller ID.
Yeah, it's a Powers Production Office. Wow. What?
That's so freaking awesome. Yeah.
Total insanity. And meanwhile, at the same time, the Ultimate Spider-Man cartoon is in full development. My first episode got animated, and all three of my episodes have been recorded already. Wow. So, and that'll be on television for sure next winter or whenever it's debuting. And we're pretty soon on hearing an answer on Jessica Jones of all goddamn things.
Oh man!
Oh, I forgot about that.
That's Jeff Loeb's department, and I just had a very long discussion with him the day before yesterday, and ABC will be making a decision very soon. The script is very good, and much more faithful than I would have been, to be honest with you. I was quite flattered by it. At the same time, gigantically relieved.
She's smoking. Was there reference? Was she smoking cigarettes?
There is references to all sorts of naughty things.
What about Fire? That was You were writing the script.
The script, right? I'm supposed to be writing instead of doing this podcast? Yes.
I see how it is.
I absolutely have to, or someone will kill me, finish the script very, very soon. So I'm on the second draft right now. It got sidelined a little bit by the Powers production, because you just go about your day, with the gigs that you have, and you can't like hope to God that your show gets greenlit, but then it gets greenlit, and then all these gigs that you committed to, you have to do. So yeah, I'll have a fire finished this month. So we'll see. I don't know. I have no I'll write my little heart out and hope for the best.
It sounds like you're basically on your way to having like an ending for Fortune and Glory too, if you ever decide to do one, because this is
I've said to you guys in the past, what I'm looking for a sequel, Fortune and Glory, is a completely different experience. Mm-hmm. So this is it. But I do realize that for Fortune and Glory to work, something has to completely fail. Like, so if Powers doesn't go, if it just completely falls apart, then I get this graphic novel that I've been dying to do. So it's win-win or a lose-lose. I can't tell what it is. But the same thing with my Marvel tell-all. Like, I really have to shit the bed for the book to have any kind of interesting. Right now, it's just like, oh, and then that came out, and that did okay. You know, it's not interesting, but the details of the story are interesting. I definitely am going to do like a Fortune Glory comic book version, just like Steve Martin's book. He had a book called Born Standing or Still Standing or something, or where he just talked about his stand-up that led right up to the jerk. And that was fascinating. And I go, oh, see, that's what I should do. I should do everything up to Ultimate Spider-Man. That's all interesting stuff. And it's certainly a portrait of what comic books were in the 90s. That's different from the Image story that we've heard over and over. So that I'm definitely going to do. And then after I come out the other side of this Marvel part of my life, however that goes, I'll figure out how to write all that I've seen, my big tell-all. And I tell you, and at the words of my Marvel tell-all, Mark Millar should shit his pants.
Yeah, he announced recently that he's finally, he's finished up his commitments with Marvel. He's not, renewing his exclusive, and you're still tied to a multi-year exclusive with them. Do you foresee yourself doing basically the same amount of Marvel work you're doing right now with your creator-owned stuff really taking off, or will you be having like an equal amount of Marvel and creator-owned stuff out there all at once?
I feel bad when Mark makes these announcements. I mean, obviously they're insanely self-serving and and a little insulting to other creators. I wish he wouldn't do that, but he's always done it, so there's nothing that stops him. Mm-hmm. That's just who he is. You know, it's like getting mad at my dog for peeing somewhere or something. It's just, but no, I just look at it differently. I mean, this is the argument I had with Kirkman as well. I get the, wanting to be the king of your own castle. I totally get that, but you can do both. And if you're allowed to do both, why wouldn't you? You know, it's such an honor to write these characters. It's my life's dream. And my other life stream is to have my own company and my own characters and my own thing. I get both. So why not do both? And in my opinion, they inform each other creatively. The lessons I learned working at Marvel, working on the creative committee for Marvel Studios has completely changed my life and perspective on how to communicate ideas to people. I mean, and some of it would be in my scripts would be very subtle, but it's a world of difference. It's like every day is college for me, and I get to apply whatever I'm learning directly into whatever work I'm doing. So why not take full advantage of all that life has to offer? I get to every couple of months, I get to spend a great deal of time with Kenneth Branagh or Jon Favreau or whoever, and just take whatever, you know, and I'm offering what I know and they're offering what they know. And then I take what they know and I think about how it applies to me, and do that. I don't see any negative, and when I see someone just try to be cool and shit on mainstream comics, I go, nah, man, it's a little as my grandfather used to say, jive. And I see it. I see so much positive that you get out of it. The constraints that come with writing mainstream comics, which are, you know, basically language and violence or whatever, are so just force creativity and honesty out of you, like that I get to do that, and then I get to go nuts in Scarlet. Like, I get to do both things, and both parts of my brain are being used for whenever I need to completely go nuts. So whenever I have this desire to, you know, help craft this modern mythology of Marvel Comics, it's there for me as well. So I for as long as they'll have us, why wouldn't you do that? So, but I get it. I mean, if you run out of steam, yeah, don't do it. You know what I mean? If Mark just completely lost interest in it, absolutely he shouldn't be writing these books, because the readers of these comics want people who give a shit. And if you don't give a shit, don't do it. Right? So I'm with him there. I just wish you could do it without dumping on other people. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I mean, it's always better to, you know, it's better just to talk about, you know, be excited about what you're about to do rather than crap on what everyone else is doing.
Yeah, it's crazy, especially, like, the next day you have a book coming out that's that is a Marvel. I don't get it.
It's also weird because, you know, I know, because you're the big name in comics, and a lot of the focus and opinions people ask of you, but you're not the only one who does the main Marvel stuff and your creator owned books. I mean, you know, you guys got Brubaker and Matt Fraction, who are architects of the Marvel Universe, and they're doing their own thing with, you know, Criminal and Incognito and Casanova. Even Christos Gage has another book at his own book at Avatar. So it's not like, you know, I completely agree with you.
Listen, everyone has to do their own thing. Robert is completely happy doing his own thing. He was not happy at Marvel, right? Mm-hmm. So, you know, just realize that and I'm saying this about myself as well. Like that, like I'm telling you how it works for me. Like that makes me happy to have both opportunities. Is an amazing gift to me. So I will not squander them. And Mark's done. He's done. That's cool. I'm with that on that. But again, it's more about, it's not leaving. It's how you leave. You know.
Exactly. Yeah. I think he could have. I definitely think he could have handled that better, because I don't know. There's no. I mean, if not for the Marvel thing, I mean, he gained notoriety because of his work for Marvel.
And, yeah, exactly. And just be proud of that.
Yeah.
And also, I know. Listen, I'm just the minute we're done with this, I will be tweeting. Hey, if you guys like Ultimate Spider-Man, you really should pre-order Brilliant, because a great deal of the direct market audience of comics bought Scarlet because they like Daredevil, you know what I mean? And yeah. And so that's how they discover you or discover us as a team. And then there's absolutely nothing wrong with that, man. It's really, it's the way to go. But listen, me and Mark have always, and it was kind of what was special about our partnership years ago, was we couldn't have been thinking of things more differently. You know, he's always been a hit and run creator, and is baffled. Yeah. My interest in staying with the title more than six issues. From the first day we met each other, he never understood why I was doing it the way I want to do it. And, you know, and as we all get older, and it's kind of funny that he's focused on film and I'm focused on long form storytelling and television, that it's, you know, that everyone kind of goes their own way.
That was actually one of the coolest things that ever happened to me on your message board was back when we were you were still at the image boards, and mm-hmm. I started this thread about my problem with Mark Millar and how I liked him as a writer, but he never stayed on for more than 6 or 8 or 12 issues or whatever. And you guys had a really cool back and forth about that. And I was like, I can't believe this happened in my thread.
I remember that now. We had that privately a lot, too. I mean, he would pull me aside and go, get off the book. And I'm like, no. but that was cool. Our not having the same goals probably made the Ultimate Universe more interesting. It was just me and him for a while, and we could not have had more different goals. And it just, I don't know, it just kind of worked.
Yeah, it's kind of funny that, you know, especially recently, it was just you two doing Ultimate Books anyway. You were there in the beginning, and right now, towards, like, I guess, the relaunch, because, you know, you're starting all the books over from the beginning, and you have, of course, instead of Mark Millar, this time you have John Hickman and Nick Spencer with you.
Yes. And Spencer was a member of my board for so long, I get 10% of his royalties, so that's cool.
it's pretty cool, though, because, like, both John Hickman and Nick, they both were, you know, on your boards first before they hit it big.
Yeah.
And it's pretty amazing that now they're relaunching a line with you.
Yeah, I discovered both of their work from the board, so that is, you know, at least from my perspective. I mean, I'm immensely proud of what Jonathan has done. I think he is on track to just, you know, go the distance like Mark and myself and Loeb had, and, you know, and Ed and Matt, and I'm just immensely happy about that. I was the one that was championing him at Marvel, but this would have happened eventually anyhow. Like, an idiot could see that he had the goods, you know. So it's it's just me, John, and Nick, and it's a tight-knit group. It's certainly what I think makes this for a very focused relaunch. Everyone's got something very unique to say, and we like each other, and we have different perspectives on the Ultimate Universe. So it's been a lot of fun.
Yeah,
very, very easy, very, very nice. I don't like that all of a sudden I'm the old whore at the whorehouse. You know, every article is like, I go, I think Jonathan's a year younger than me. Can we all cut it out with me being the old guy or something? You know.
Really? Okay. I could have sworn he was a little young, much younger than that, but whatever.
No, and I believe Nick Spencer is at least 5 or 6 years older than all of us. So, you know, all of a sudden he had like 6 careers before this. So.
Yeah.
Wasn't he mayor of Wisconsin or something?
I think he was running for he ran for office somewhere from what I remember, but yeah. But speaking of the Marvel stuff, though, I can't let this podcast go without kind of going through Avengers real quickly.
Sure.
I loved the big Infinity Gauntlet story since I was one of the guys who really, really was into the Infinity Gauntlet when it was coming out. So I really enjoyed that particular storyline, and I also thought that the Avengers. Since the relaunch after, you know, after when the Heroic Age started, I thought the Avengers book, it felt more like an actual event book. But I mean, in a good way, because, like, you know, Avengers is the focal point of the Marvel Universe, and all the big stuff is happening there. And I've really enjoyed that direction that this particular title has gone through since the relaunch.
It came out of, you know, when the Ultimate Universe launched, almost every storyline was an event. And when New Avengers launched, that was my mandate. Like, every one of these is going to be a world changer. And that spun so quickly that House of M was like out by the third arc. You know what I mean? That's how fast it started the event chain happening again, which wasn't my intention, but it just kind of snowballed, right?
Mm-hmm.
So, and then all of a sudden the events snowball out. So when we did the relaunch, I said, even though I think I've stuck to my guns pretty good about, you know, having stuff really matter in the book and all that, I said, well, I want to really make sure that, you know, yeah, every storyline is an event like it should be, whether it's an emotional event or a physical event. It should, you know, something that matters should really happen. And we've been, we've been rocking it, man. Johnny is amazing. Johnny is great. And I'm so happy Johnny stayed for the next year.
Oh, cool.
Yeah, I know. I wasn't sure how long he was on for. I know he's got kick-ass money now, so I wasn't sure if he wanted to take a nap. I don't know. What do you want to do? So, and then when we were heading towards 12, and we were like, hey, you still in? He's like, absolutely. I'm like, oh, okay, great. That's fantastic. So he just needed a little tiny break with the Pacello issue, so we could, he wanted to get back into a schedule. He didn't feel like there's a lot to draw. I don't think that'll be a surprise to anyone. It's a lot of work. It's more work than just drawing Amazing Spider-Man or something where it's one villain hitting one hero. It's a lot on every page. So, and I was, quite often pushing him to see how much I can get him to draw, because I'm so happy to draw in the book, which is not fair, but it takes its toll. So he needed a couple issues off, which we split up over, a couple issues, but yeah, so he's back in.
Yeah, I go ahead, Antonio.
Oh, no, I was just going to say that. I mean, I thought you had him drawing so much stuff in the first arc of Avengers, and then in the second arc you threw in the Secret Avengers and all the Avenger teams.
I did, first of all, I think, when people buy the Avengers, they want to see all these characters on panel together. Even subconsciously, that's what they want. They want, it's not just that Spider-Man and Captain America are in the same book. It's that you're looking at them in the same panel. You're never going to see that in the movie. So you should show them what they'll never see anywhere else. And then things kind of snowball out of there. The group of the Avengers, and then all of a sudden we go, well, if the whole group's there, then let's draw the whole group. And so it does get a little not fair to the artist. It's a very hard book to draw. It's been a hard book since David Finch's days. It just is. But everyone rises to the occasion. They really know what they're doing. So yeah.
I always thought that your Avengers books, like even from Disassembled and onwards, I always thought it was like. It's a really big artistic showcase. Everyone just really show off their stuff. And you've got to get guys who are not really known for doing monthly books to turn in work on time, because I don't think you've missed I don't think you've ever missed shipping from the beginning of New Avengers or from Disassembled. So I always thought, wow.
We're absolutely not allowed to miss shipping. We're a top five book most of the time. That means that, a lot is riding on us, commercially. It has to ship. So Tom Brevoort runs an amazing ship to make that happen. And sometimes I'll be working and all of a sudden they'll email me about something and it's 8 o'clock at night, my time, which means it's 11 o'clock their time. They're waiting to get the book out the door. So they really put in late night sometimes to make sure that book ships. They do it quietly. They don't bitch about it, but it's kind of amazing,
Yeah, it really is. I mean, the fact that you guys can get David Finch to put out a book every month, Steve McNiven, all these guys who,
My biggest, Jimmy Chung was my big win. I got Jimmy to draw.
Oh, man.
I'm not sure why. Copiel, Matt is having a lot of luck right now with Copiel. Copiel's delivering monthly on Thor.
Yeah.
Which has not always been easy. So, but I not to be braggy, it's not only about just the script, but just the environment. 90% of the time, if the artist is really digging it, it comes fast. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? But you can't always control that. But I pride myself on building a relationship with the artists that I work with, that they know exactly what. How much they're appreciated and how much I think they're delivering and try to write something that I really think they'd like to draw. I do sometimes push a little, I probably push David Finch right off the book, but it's only because I'm a fan and I want them to do the best they can, mm-hmm. And so like even Daniel Arcuna did an amazing issue of New Avengers recently. I literally was like, dude, I've got this storyline. What do you want to draw? Is there anything you want to draw that no one's letting you draw? Let me know. And if I can find a way to put it in. And he wrote Dr. Doom. And I said, Dr. Doom it is. And I crafted the script for him. And the guy killed it. Every
I love that guy's work, man.
So sometimes it's just that easy. It's finding that one element that they've been dying to do that no one even asks them what they want to draw. And sometimes it's very surprising. Sometimes it's I want to draw romance. I want to draw, you know, I want to draw this. I want to draw that. And it's the best. It's the best. The art comes in, and they loved it, and they had a good time. The best.
I can't imagine that, but I actually, what I like that you've been doing recently is the two artists in the same book. Like, I really like the Howard Chaykin stuff with the Mike Deodato stuff, but also when you were doing it before the relaunch, you know, when Acuna was doing, and Stewart were doing, you know, different sections of the book. Is that something that's going to continue? To maybe like keep an artist on time, so just to split, or use it like as you did with the Chaykin stuff, which was like, all right, now we're doing Avengers 1959, and Mike Deodato is doing the present stuff.
Yeah, well, that one was specifically, you know, Chaykin had this idea for this Nick Fury, Mad Men, Nazi Hunter kind of thing that he wanted to do, and
that sounds like the coolest thing ever.
I know, and you go, oh, yeah, okay, I'm in. Yeah, I'm totally in. But at the same time, you're like, I also would like people to see it, you know. And you know, the marketplace is not always kind to ideas like that. Uh-huh. So I said, and I, only because a story like that, if you just tell, it's got to matter. It's got to. You know, mean something to what's going on in today. And I came back to him with the pitch that, you know, there's parallel stories and they all come to fruition at the end where it really alters the life of one of the Avengers in a profound way. And he went, great, I'm in, you know. So that was where two artists specifically, you know, done that. Yeah, but every once in a while, a script will come in and it's bouncing back and forth between two scenes. And, you know, Tom will say, hey, you know, this might be a good place to get Stewart, you know, some breathing room, you know, cause sometimes they're literally drawing it every day. And there's just, you know, if it just had that one extra day, they'd feel better, you know? And, yeah. And you go, oh great. Yeah, no, I actually have one that would split up very nicely and actually probably benefit from two different artists. So I like that. I like jam books. I like, you know, I like,
you know, I like that stuff too.
Yeah.
And that's when I finally, when I got my feet on the ground at Marvel, I did all those jam books. They're insanely hard to put together, but, they're just utter madness. But I love doing them. Of course they have to be story motivated. You can't just do them to do them, but, yeah, I'm always a big fan of them. My favorite was I what I keep stealing from is Justice League 200. It was a big, thick book, had like a square binding on it, and it had a chapter by Brian Bolan and a chapter by this guy, and it was where I discovered Brian Bolan's work. It actually kind of rattled me, but I loved every chapter was by a different artist, and it was like a celebration. I loved it.
Yeah, I liked when you did that with the Avengers finale,
yeah.
or like that Ultimate Spider-Man special.
And yep. Then there's Avengers number new Avengers number 50 where you pretty much got like one of the each page had like an artist that was very much you know synonymous with the character that was featured there. I thought that was pretty
good. Yeah.
I did that also in I'll probably do it again because it's like this itch I can't scratch. But I did it in Daredevil 50 where I had every great Daredevil.
Oh yeah.
I couldn't get Miller to do it, but I got everybody else. So.
Yeah, that would have been cool to have Miller on. But, you know, having Klaus Janson was a pretty good...
he's amazing. And we're back working on Daredevil End of Days. So hopefully that will see the light of day very soon.
Okay. Speaking of something that's seeing the light of day very soon, I was just curious as to... Actually, this is a question that was being requested that I asked of you by a mutual friend of ours, Lord Retail.
Lord Retail! He is actually the Lord of Retail. Did you know that?
Yes, he is. He has agents everywhere, apparently.
Yes, he does.
He was curious to see what you thought of the DC relaunch as a creator or as someone who has worked behind the comic shop.
I'm of mixed feelings. I legitimately have no competitive feelings about that. Every once in a while, I'll make a goofy comment. People go, oh, come on. I'm like, no, no, come on. You're fucking around. But a lot of the people working on those books are friends of mine, and I'm praying to baby Jesus they do well. I'm confused by the marketing idea of doing them all in 1 month, other than it's a good press release. I think it actually could hurt a lot of them. Like, some of those books are not going to make it, because why would a retailer focus on that book versus Justice League? Like, why wouldn't you just spend all your money ordering Justice League? So I don't know why they didn't do, like if it was Joe Quesada would have done Superman month, Batman month, Justice League month, Vertigo month, and kept this press train going for like a year, you know? Mm-hmm. Or build it all up towards Batman month, which is the same month Dark Knight comes out, something like that. That to me would have given more books a fair shot. I you know, who knows? This could be the miracle that saves all comics, and I hope it is. But it seems rushed, and it seems like you're asking too much from certain readers who would give more books a chance if you let them. Does that make sense?
Yeah, I can see where you're coming from.
Yeah, so I don't know, Swamp Thing or Vigilante or whatever that historically have never been big sellers. I don't see how this helps them. I mean, all the marketing is going to be on Justice League, and it should be. That's the one everyone's going to buy. Why would you put yourself in competition with your own machine?
Yeah, I see where you're coming from, but I guess it is a really interesting idea. Although
it's very interesting.
There's a lot of questions, though. I mean, like a couple episodes back, we actually talked about it in the podcast, and we're trying to figure out like how do you reconcile a lot of the stuff that. Because a lot of comic readers, you know, for good or ill, they really want their books to matter, and then now this relaunch may be affecting the books that are coming out before it, because people won't think that those books don't matter anymore.
Yeah, Tom was the first person that said that online. He said, "Well, so are you saying these don't matter?" And of course, he's vice president of Marvel. People go, "Oh, stop bitching at them," but it's a good point. As a fan, you go, "All right, you know." And also, my only other criticism is it feels. Behind the scenes, you know, I obviously know a lot of people working on it. It seems a tad rushed, and that worries me. I'd rather they took a few more months and really make sure they have their... Doesn't mean their books won't be great, because sometimes a book gets slapped together real fast, and it's the best thing anyone's ever done, you know? Mm-hmm. Time doesn't make a book better. I worry about it. Again, because this is an excellent idea, and it's going to get new people in the store, which is good for everybody. I want it to do well, and I want everyone to succeed. And because if it doesn't, heads are going to roll over there, and I don't want that to happen.
Yeah. Well, I guess we'll see what happens.
Yeah, it's interesting. You got to give them that.
Yeah, it's it gets some attention, and apparently they're going to be doing like a national ad campaign too, which is a pretty good idea. And
yeah, I'm all for that, man. Yeah. Absolutely. I hope Marvel will follow suit.
Yeah, and I think Joe himself has said that Joe Quesada has said that, you know, once DC has a good idea, he'll have no problem copying it. So hopefully this is good.
Yeah, exactly. No, but you know, we're doing the ultimate relaunch at the same time, and it's more my taste. It's focused. It's three authors. The voices are very coherent and concise, and it's much easier to buy into without breaking the bank. It's kind of what I like more. You know.
Did you see the dig Marvel did in the previews?
Yeah, it's a goofy shit they do. I'm not a big fan of that stuff. That's the, you know, I always kind of roll my eyes at it. It's what Marvel does. It's certainly Joe does this shit all the time. I always roll my eyes at it. It's like when he does that every time he did that Didio phone call joke at a panel. I every time I roll my eyes at it, that's all right.
I find it funny that they did that bit, and then they have Uncanny, which is like still 500 something, and then the next month it relaunches. I just
exactly
the irony was just pretty.
Someone go, oh, you're full of shit too.
Yeah. Well, at any rate, Brian, I think we've reached that point where we have to say, you know, we have to say goodbyes. So what's the best place people can find you online? Of course, JinxWorld.com.
JinxWorld.com and Twitter at Brian M. Bendis. I am there often, maybe too often. And
it's okay. It's fun. You know, it's kind of cool that you're there all the time because you respond to a lot of fans all the time. So that's pretty damn cool of you to do. So I think they would mind seeing more of you on.
Well, what I think I'm going to do this summer is I'm going to be tweeting from the Powers pilot as often as possible with pics and stuff like that. Much like Tom Hanks did with Larry Crown and stuff. I like when people do that. I like watching the process unfold through the eyes of the author. So I am going to, and it's not always exciting for comic book people. Here I am on my computer, woo. But this I'm gonna tweet pick as often as possible. So you guys want to watch it unfold?
Oh yeah!
Oh yeah! Totally. Yeah.
That'll be the place.
Yeah, it'd be kind of
that's cool.
That's gonna be awesome. You just. Man, I'm looking forward to seeing what they do for that show. Are they gonna? This is kind of a weird question to ask at this point, but are we gonna see Trip Hammer in the show?
Yes.
All right.
Trip Hammer, Retro Girl, Zora, Johnny Royale. Those casting announcements are coming very, very soon. Most of them have been cast. Retro Girl, I think people will be very, very happy about.
Yes, I saw pictures of I forgot her name, Brandy, I believe. I think she looks the part. You know, she definitely looks like a kid, which works perfectly for Calista.
I'm talking about the original Retro Girl.
Original, okay.
Which will have more of a part on the show, even though this will be the story of her murder, just like the comic. Mm-hmm. A lot of these have been cast. They're all pretty cool. The one thing you would have loved is, you know, we had hundreds of auditions of actors for every part. And every day it was amazing what name actor came in to read for a role was always shocking. And all the actors that I had long talks with about Walker, like name actors, and you're like, I can't believe I'm even talking to this dude.
Are you at liberty to name drop anyone?
Yeah, you know, it's insanely not cool.
Okay, that's perfect. Fine. Don't worry about it.
The job, because it's not that they were bad or anything, but I would wake up and I would get an email and there'd be some name actor, and you go, really? Yeah.
Do you know what the nerdy thing that I'm looking forward to with the Powers show is? Like, I'm looking forward to the opening credits.
Well, it's just going to be like Lost. Just go boom. And then,
I'm going to assume that you and Mike will have cameos in the show, too, because that'd be awesome.
I'm not a cameo guy. You know, Marvel's been nice to offer me a cameo on just about everything. And we're actually, me and Matt are actually heading up to the Avengers set on Monday.
Wow.
But, oh, my God, that's awesome.
Oh, did I just let that slip? Yeah, heading over to the Avengers set. But, I am not a cameo dude per se. They've offered numerous times, and any movie where you see a bunch of S.H.I.E.L.D. agents, I was supposed to be in that scene, but I don't.
Is it because if you walked in the background, people would be like, "What is Michael Chiklis as Ben Grimm doing in the background?"
Yeah, or that other dude that everyone keeps I forget his name, but
I forgot his name.
Evan Hammer.
It doesn't matter what his name is.
Yeah, I kept waiting for him because he never auditioned for Powers. I don't know, man. If I really wanted to do it, I would. I get skeevy every time, so I think it's just best that I stay where I am, which is a disembodied voice on your computer.
Tweet pictures from the Avengers set.
I do not think I'll be allowed to.
Yeah, I doubt it.
I know. It was just wishful thinking.
That's a big one.
Well, anyway, Brian,
hear a nerdgasm coming from another state, that's me and Matt.
Man, I can't wait to see that movie, man.
It's a fantastic screenplay. No, and listen, I wouldn't say a peep if I thought otherwise. It is fantastic. I'm in awe of it.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, I was really sad when they announced that they wouldn't be taking anything to San Diego this year because after last year's big announcement, I thought, you know, it was a natural thing. But I guess it's kind of nice to have to be able to wait for it like everyone else does.
Are you guys going to be in San Diego?
No.
You will, right, Pat?
Of course, I live there.
No, because we were actually even debating whether Power shows up but we'll be filming during it. So if it's too early, it's a confusing thing. We don't know what to do. You know, maybe I'll be there, maybe I won't. I don't know. I think it might be too early, but you can't come with nothing. You know what I mean?
Yeah, that's the thing. And
yeah, that's the thing.
Okay, you gotta show something. So if we have something to show. Yeah, but you know, FX has a room and they have a big presentation, so they offer. But
Sons of Anarchy is going to be there.
Yeah, Sons of Anarchy and
for some reason
and Wilfred and all these other cool things, you know. But
I'd love Louis to be there. That'd be great.
I love that show. Oh my God!
Yeah, me too.
It's on tonight.
Yeah, I know. Finally, after all this time.
Yeah, we're waiting for a while.
The Wilford reviews are really great too. I'm really excited about that. I haven't seen it.
Yeah, I'm excited here. For that concept. I thought it looks like a lot of fun. I can't wait to see it.
All right, cool, mate. Well, guys, you guys are awesome. You guys know I love you.
Yeah, man. Thanks again for coming on.
Yeah, thank you very much.
And we look forward to having you back sometime soon. Maybe when Power is, comes out, or maybe if there's something else comes out in the books, and we'll be glad to have you back on this talk.
So maybe we'll talk after the pilot films, and we'll talk in August or something like that, and we'll let you give you scoop if I got any scoop.
All right. That would be awesome.
Right. Talk to you soon.
All right. See Take care, sir, and keep up the good work.
You got it, man. Bye-bye.
Your rat, you wear that jacket.
How many rappers must get this? Give me 8 bars and watch me bliss. This I start to reminisce. Ooh, and I miss the real hip hop, the bitch I persist. Like rum and mojitos, bullets and banditos, lots of balls and soup, jackets and juice, just storms. One for the history book. Nasty Nas, what's the word? Count it off on the hook.
Let's go.
One, two, three. Too many rappers, and it's still not enough MCs. It goes three, two, one. MCA, Ad Rock, Mike D, that's how we get it done. Like, ladies and gents, attention. Nas in the house with Beastie Boys, we can turn it out. Perpetrators, we can point them out. So if you got something on your mind, let it out.
Lyrical
crystals inside your brain to pull your bullshit level straight out the frame. The lyrics spin round like a hurricane twister to get your hologram on off a wolf blitzer. Too many rappers to shake a stick at. I ought to judge a task for every weak rack I had to listen to, cause we've been making stacks like stacks records. My squad, we got a pack. We never come a whack. To all you crab rappers and hackers and circuit vendors, truth don't splendor. I take the cake, I stole the mold. The golden microphone, well, let's mine the hole. And why all these biters all up in my crotch? They sniffing, buffing, huffing, and mean mugging with a blimpy bluffing. Back up off me, sucker, you ain't saying nothing.
I'm broader than Broadway, I was the project hallway. Dual tape, recorder, lacing auditoriums all day. I'm just getting started on this beat, this is foreplay. And when the song finish, I can sing along with us. By the way, I have a strong fetish for Christian Louboutin steppers. I hear Russian blondes the wettest. But anyway, y'all better pay homage to my fellas. And that's what's on my mind. And the rhyme, who's next up?
Mike D, the man of mystery. History in the making, and now we're cooking. Titles, awards, and accolades. Screw the competition as I sharpen my blades. We come together like peanut butter and sandwiches. Like in a paper, like Picasso with canvases. Rocking stadiums to shitty bars. Go back in time, send out facts from my car.
One, two, three. Too many rappers and it's still not enough MCs. It goes three, two, one. MCA, Ad-Rock, Mike D, this how we get it done. Like ladies and gents, attention. Nas in the house with Beastie Boys, we can turn it out. Perpetrators, we can point them out. So if you got something on your mind, let it out.
That was...